Hi, I'm Claire Davis from Mental Health Chats, and we're here to encourage people to open up conversations about mental health. Hi everyone, I'm Claire Davis and I'm back with Mental Health Chats, and we're working with you for better emotional fitness. And we've got Benny back on the topic of self-harm. Hi Benny, how are you going?
Hi Claire. Yeah, good. How are you going?
I'm well, thank you. And it's great to see you again. And I have found our speakers absolutely amazing for self-harm. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, really interesting. Really interesting. And a lot of experience amongst them. So Tom Hoskins, they just seem to deal with so many people on a weekly basis. It was incredible.
And what I loved about the speakers that we had for self-harm was that we had Sevilla, who has self-harmed herself, Tom Hoskins, who helps young kids in coaching them on mental health. Then we had a mental health nurse, so from the medical side, Sylvia, and then a teacher who helps back in schools. So it's from all different angles. And what I found really interesting with regards to Satvia and Tom's talks were their definitions of self-harm. So what did you get out of that, Benny?
Yeah, well, self-harm is when someone intentionally hurts or injures themselves. For some, self-harm can represent a way of coping with or expressing feelings and emotions that are overwhelming or overpowering. Like that's the definition. But it's a really interesting topic. And when I researched it and just looked up some of the stats, it's the prevalence isn't huge. But it's sort of in that, in the UK and Australia, it's sort of that 6 to 8% in 15 to 24-year-olds. But, of course, it's a really serious issue. And the speakers were really good when they talked about it.
And what I found interesting about the stats was that they actually stated that you know, it's 6 to 8%, but it's not just teenagers. And so often in our heads, we relate self-harm to teenagers and, you know, kids at school. So you've got some stats for the older age bracket as well, haven't you, Benny?
Yeah. So, whilst it's that sort of 6 to 8% in younger people, the lifetime prevalence rates are actually higher. And so it's like 17% for Australian females, 12% for Australian males in that sort of 15 to 19-year-old bracket, but it jumps up to 24% of females and 18% of males in that 20 to mid-20s, mid-20 range that report self-harm at some time, at some point in their lives. And the mean age of onset is actually 17 years.
Which is a surprise, really, isn't it?
Towards the end of those teenage years.
And you know, the stats that we've looked at also said that many instances go unreported, and that's intriguing, and that actually 50% of those who self-harm receive psychological help. So reflecting from Sylvia's talk, she said one of the most important things is to get medical help, to go and get these people to see their doctors and to get medical help. So we need to be opening up these conversations a lot more so that people understand that they can get help. Because what I also found really interesting was Tom's talk, where he stated quite clearly that, and Satvia said, it's a stigma, it's attention seeking, And when I was a teenager, that's what we all said. I remember people saying that. But it's actually more than that. It becomes a habit. And on one of the reports from Self-Injury Awareness Day in 2020, it states that this is why people are self-harming. And it states that they feel a sense of control of their own body or feelings. They actually feel something because they actually really feeling numb. They relieve, they relieve guilt by punishing themselves. They relieve that guilt and they reduce the stress. So we really need to address, why is this person self-harming? Not the first reaction that a lot of us have, which is, well, why are you hurting yourself? That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous, which is what can go through some of our minds. It has. I'll admit, when I was a teacher and I knew of students who self-harm, it's, well, are they attention-seeking? Why are they doing this? And not fully understanding. That was back in the 90s. So we didn't understand mental health then, but not fully understanding why people are self-harming. And Satvia and Tom stated that so clearly in how we can help people. So have you got any other stats, Benny?
Yeah, I was just reflecting on Tom's talk in particular. He did make that point. It's just like a vicious cycle. If you can't get to the root cause of it, it just feeds on itself, the whole shame thing and the stigma. But, another 50% figure, Claire, 50% of young people, only 50% of young people seek help, and it's mainly through family and friends, not through professionals. The most common methods of self-harm, cutting. I hadn't even heard of cutting until I had a friend in Dubai. His daughter, he referred to her cutting herself. I said, what do you mean cutting? And I didn't even know what that was several years ago, so I was completely ignorant. But cutting's the sort of number one. Deliberate overdoses of medication, you know, that's self-poisoning. Burning, pinching, scratching, hitting, banging body parts, hanging, and wound interference. They're the main methods that are quoted.
And what I found interesting by Tom's talk was that he said that it becomes a habit. This relief becomes a habit, and we don't want it to get to crisis point. So how do we help these people get out of that habit? How do we support them so they can get out of that habit and then not go back to the habit, so that the habit's not triggered again? Which is really hard, actually.
Really it is hard. Because people already suffer a mental health issue. They're eight times more prevalent, more at risk. Eight times more people who've got an existing mental health issue are inflicting self-harm upon themselves. So that was another interesting stat. So whilst suicide is more common amongst young men, self-harm is more common amongst young women.
Interesting. Very interesting. And we don't want it to get to crisis point where it ends up becoming suicide, because they've gone too far. They've want to relieve that pain so far. And Tom mentioned that. And what I loved with our speakers is they're all so honest, but at different levels. And I think Trent's talk was so, so important about how, as parents, as teachers, and as fellow students, can we support friends? How can we support people? What can we say? Because our initial reaction is, stop hurting yourself, stop hurting yourself. Yeah. Why are you hurting yourself? And that's almost a judgment reaction, but that's because we care. So what I found interesting by the research that I've looked up, and it does reflect on what Trent says, is to build up that trust and that relationship, no matter who you are in the relationship, and really listen. But also, so one of the links that I'll put in has the five top questions to ask. And each of those questions mentions the word self-harm. Why, you know, you're self-harming. I've noticed this. I've noticed marks on your arms. Whereas so often we shy away from using the terms. And it's really stating to use the term, address it, let them know what you've noticed. So I think this is really important in building that trust, that we can then have the conversation and talk to them about what you have noticed and how can I support you, really.
Yeah.
definitely.
Importantly, Claire, in that website that you're referring to, the self website, it had the top five questions to ask, but it also importantly had the three things not to say. Mm. And I think sometimes it's just as important what you don't say as what you do say. Definitely. And, you know, they were things like, can I see, things aren't that bad, get over it. And if you don't stop, I can't be your friend anymore.
Well, that's when I read that, I thought that is such a thing that we said at school, you know, if you don't stop, I can't be your friend anymore. And unfortunately it is, we're trying to help, but it doesn't actually come across as being helpful.
Yeah, but I thought the five questions, people should read those. Yeah. They're not just applicable for self-harm. I thought they can be applied to just broader mental health issues. You can just sort of vary them a bit. No, they really nailed it. You know, I can see you're in a lot of pain. Do you want to tell me what's going on? What gives you the urge to self-harm? It's okay if you don't want to talk about it now. I'm here whenever.
That's a brilliant question. That's a really good question. And that's a question that in my courses on having the conversation in the workplace, I tell people to say they may not want to talk now, but let them know that you are here for when they're ready to talk. So this leads us on to, I love this section of our talks, Benny, where you give us the takeaways. So would you like to give us your takeaways? That'd be great.
Yep. My take home tips from all the speakers and the research that I did. Treat all self-harm cases seriously and don't dismiss them as attention seeking. That's about the worst thing you can do. Yes. You know, you've got to enable that communication, encourage them to seek support. Talk about it to remove the negative stigma. Remove the shame and secrecy components and make people feel comfortable to share their stories. The third one was understand the key factors that underpin self-harm. You know, those things like anger, guilt, hopelessness. It's more likely to be a cry for help and support due to pre-existing mental health challenges. They therefore need professional help to break that vicious cycle that Tom talked about. The fourth one was trust. Create an environment of trust. Everyone talked about trust.
Yeah.
All four speakers. Create an environment of trust and respect to enable relationships that allow better communication so you can talk about it. The fifth one was be aware of how it can escalate.
Yeah.
Whilst it starts with that cry for help, it can really easily build to more serious actions if not properly addressed. And of course, we're talking about advancing to suicide. And listen and respond was the sixth one. That was my sort of final one. That listening that you've already mentioned and responding appropriately, that's so important. And just to be aware that there are limits to how much you can actually do. And we always revert back to seeking professional help and referring people to get some professional help.
You've hit the nail on the head there, Benny. And I think for me, in just listening to you there, for me, because it's such a shock to see it, so often we react in that, why are you doing this? It's bad, etc. So it's noticing, stopping, breathing, and thinking about the bigger picture, not just the way that they're harming themselves, which can be very difficult. So thank you for summing that up. That's been, been a brilliant summary. And thank you all for listening. Very, very interesting topic of self-harm. And for me, it's really opened up my eyes that it's not just about teenagers. It can occur with any age group, and it's a real cry for help. So thank you and take care.
Thanks, bye. See you later.
Bye. We hope you enjoyed the chat. If you found any of the tips useful, follow Mental Health Chats. Thank you.